Well, I heard a funny story about a ship. This ship was at sea in the Atlantic Ocean, and as the ship was moving through the Atlantic Ocean, a storm came up. And as the storm became worse and worse, the winds got stronger, the waves got higher, the captain of the ship announced to the crew members, and he called out to the crew and he said, "Does anyone here know how to pray?" One of the crew members came forward and said, "Yes, sir, I know how to pray." He said, "Wonderful. You pray, the rest of you put on life jackets. We're one short, so." Sometimes you're the one praying. Well, this morning as we come to John's gospel, we come to a storm story. If you'll recall that Jesus and the disciples have been out in the countryside, they've been in the hills of Galilee, and he's been teaching and he's been healing, and that whole scene from last week culminates in Jesus feeding 20,000 people. It's perhaps the greatest miracle of his earthly ministry, or at least one of the greatest. The disciples have watched him do this miraculous work, but they spent much of the day searching for food because Jesus said, "We're going to feed these people. You find them food." They came up with just a little boy's sack lunch. It had some bread and had some fish in it, and Jesus takes that and he multiplies that to feed 20,000 people. And now Jesus puts the disciples in a boat and sends them across the Sea of Galilee to the city of Capernaum. They go ahead of him. And in this story, what we're going to find is that as the disciples move across the sea, they encounter a storm. They encounter strong winds. They encounter waves. They're afraid. And as we move into this story, what we're going to see is that it directly applies to the storms that each and every one of us here this morning will face. They're storms that we would rather go without, but they're storms which are inevitable. Those are the storms of life. They're storms that approach areas of our health. They're storms that gather over our finances. They're storms that gather over our relationships. They're storms that gather our emotional health, over our walk with God. These are the storms of life. These are the storms that perhaps each and every one of us would rather go without, but that every one of us will face. And today, as we come to John chapter 6, we begin reading in verse 16, Jesus and the disciples are going to have an encounter which teaches the disciples and teaches you and me how to process and how to navigate the storms of life. We begin reading John chapter 6, verse 16, where John writes this: "When evening came, the disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. Now it was dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them, and the sea became rough because of strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, Jesus saw them walking," or came to them, "walking across the sea," walking across the water. "Coming near to the boat, they were frightened. But he said to them, 'It is I, do not be afraid.' Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at land to which they were going." Jesus has sent the disciples by boat to Capernaum. Now, in order to understand this scene a little bit better, we have to understand the topography of the Sea of Galilee. As they travel from the area we would today know as the Golan Heights to Capernaum by the sea, John tells us they've rowed 3 or 4 miles. Mark says they're in the center of the sea, and a storm comes. Though the Sea of Galilee is only 12 miles long by 7 miles wide at its widest point, it's 600 feet below sea level. So what happens is that wind comes off of the eastern tablelands, and it replaces this cold wind, cold air, replaces the warm moisture above the lake, and it causes the water to churn, and it's uniquely positioned to create very violent storms. And so the disciples, they get into this boat, they head toward Capernaum, and in the middle of the night, in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, a storm hits. All of a sudden, a storm hits their boat, and what we find here in this passage is Jesus coming to them. And in his coming, we're going to learn two lessons. Two lessons which will help you and help me navigate the storms of life that are inevitable for every one of us. The first is the certainty of storms. The second is the promise of his presence. First, the certainty of storms. Though it's not popular, it's actually a lot less than popular, but life is full of storms, and not just life, but the Christian life is full of storms. In John chapter 16, I don't know if you remember this, but in verse 33, Jesus says to the disciples, in this life, you will have trouble. It's encouraging. We just camp there for a while. James says in James chapter 1, verse 2, count it joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. Added to that, that no one here graduates. You never get to a point where you graduate from the reality of storms. James says that storms aren't one-dimensional, that they come in all shapes and sizes. They come in various kinds. And so not only is it a certainty, not only is it a guarantee that you and I will encounter storms, but we're going to encounter all sorts of storms as we walk through life. And it's so interesting because here are the disciples, and they've witnessed Jesus do this astounding miracle. It has blown their minds. It is jaw-dropping in its proportion. They've witnessed this miracle. They've witnessed Jesus provide. And now they get into a boat, and just a few hours later, they're in the center of a storm, which I think probably provokes some questions. I mean, so they saw Jesus do all of this, and then he loads them in a boat, and all of a sudden, they're in a storm. And so they're asking questions like, how could this happen? Maybe even, why would this happen to us? I mean, we were with him all day. We helped him. We helped him look for food. We found the sacked lunch. We're the guys. We're his main men. Where is he? Maybe they're asking questions like, we thought we were in the center of his will. How could it be that we're now in the center of the storm? Maybe they were asking things like, how did we get dealt this hand? We've been really good guys. We have his back. Where is he at? Why would he load us in this boat? Surely if he knew, if he was God and he knew this was coming, surely he wouldn't have allowed this. Lots of questions. In 2007, Becky and I moved to Dallas, Texas. And we moved there so I could attend Dallas Theological Seminary. And we moved knowing only a few people in the city. So really, as we packed up our possessions and moved south, we were moving into the unknown. We were really going out on our own for the very first time. And we were excited. I mean, Becky would have a new job. I'd be working remotely while taking a full course load. We'd be navigating life in a new city, all very exciting. We got down there. We really started to get into the routine of life. Things started out with a ton of promise. I was excited about my classes. But a month and a half in to the semester, the fall semester, I just started to feel overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed with school. I was overwhelmed with work. I was overwhelmed with the realities of navigating our new life in the city. And I called my boss because in the middle of being overwhelmed, I had started to ask some questions like, why is this happening? I mean, we felt so clearly that this is what we were supposed to do. I didn't feel like I would, you know, I didn't feel like this would happen. And so in the middle of all those questions, what I decided to do is I would call my boss. I had a really good job, great job. Worked remotely. It was perfect for school. But I decided this is the problem, that if I quit my job, everything would be fine. And some of you, you've been there. You're like, I'll just walk in and quit today. I'll feel so much better for like 4 hours, you know. But that's what I did. And Becky and I talked about it, but I was willing, you know, some of my friends were cleaning pools for, you know, minimum wage. And I was like, I don't care. That's what I'm going to do. That would be so much better than this. I'll work twice the hours for half the money. That's what I want to do. So I called him and I said, hey, here's the deal. I'm just stressed out. I don't think this is working for you. I don't think this is working for me. What I'd like to do is, I'd like to quit. That's what I'd like to do. I don't have a plan after that. I just want to quit. And he's a godly man. He just said, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. I'm leaving the country today. I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks. While I'm gone, I'll pray about it, and you pray about it. And when I come back, we'll make a decision. Okay. I wanted to quit. I was honestly disappointed by that answer. Sounds crazy now. But while he was gone, I got really sick. Like, sicker than I've ever been in my entire life. I was bedridden for 14 days. I lost 21 pounds in 2 weeks. And while I laid in bed, I started to have some conversations with God about the storm I was in. I started to ask some questions, and in the midst of laying in that bed for 14 days, unable, like the most I could move was to walk to the bathroom and get back. In the midst of that, God began to speak some things to my heart. Some things I still remember today. Things like, do you think that this caught me by surprise? Do you think that I didn't know this was coming? Do you think this isn't part of my plan? Do you think I don't have a purpose in this? Here's the deal, when we walk through storms, when any one of us starts walking through a storm, what can begin to happen is that we start to question why it's happening to us and what's going on and how could this be fair, and all those things start to happen, our questions turn into fears, and fears evolve into doubts. This is what's happening to the disciples. You've got to think, as they're in this boat, first the wind starts blowing. And we should have waited till morning. This is not good. Then the sea starts churning around them, and the boat is rocking, and now they're rowing for dear life. And all of a sudden, those questions have turned into fears, and those fears have promised to turn into doubts. But that's exactly what happens to us. As we're in a storm, all these questions rise to the surface that we haven't dealt with in a while, and all of a sudden those questions cause us to be afraid and to doubt, and we begin to doubt God's plan, we begin to doubt God's purpose, and we even begin to doubt God's power. And we start to think that the storm that we're in detracts from God's power. Like, well, man, this storm is really big. I think I must have overestimated God. I think maybe I thought of God a little too highly. This is really bad. Things are really bad. Things aren't getting any better. So maybe, just maybe, God is just caught off guard, and that happens to me, probably happens to God. Maybe that's what's going on here. And the reality of storms is that the questions that they produce threaten to turn into fears, and fears play upon our doubts, even doubting God's power. And no doubt, the disciples are in the midst of this storm wondering if they doubted God, wondering if they thought of God too highly, wondering if Jesus really knows where they're at, wondering if he can really see their plight. But the truth is this, that storms don't detract from God's power, they validate his power. That the storms of life don't detract from God's power, they validate his power. Because Jesus, the God of the universe, is simultaneously able to send you into a storm, and yet as he sends you, say, I'm able to work all things together for your good. That's power. That God can allow you to walk through a storm, push you into a storm, and simultaneously promise in his word that he's going to work it for your good. That's what the Apostle Paul says in Romans chapter 8, verse 28. Look at this. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. All things. That means that there's not one scenario, one situation, one circumstance, or even one storm, that God in his power is not able to work for your good. That storms may be certain, but what is more certain is that God is able to work in your life and in your family and in your marriage and in your health, in your finances, in that storm that you're navigating for your good. That's the character of God. That's the nature of, that's the power of God. That's what the Apostle Paul says in Romans chapter 8. And every storm, it's important that we understand every storm. There's no storm that isn't allowed by God. And there are some storms that are brought about by God, but there is no storm through which God is not able to work for your good. Look at this. It's interesting. Mark 6:45 gives us some more insight on this story. It says, immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side. That joker. Look at that. It's not that Jesus just allowed this storm. He actually like packed a dinner for them and said, here you go. He knows what's coming. He knows what they're going to encounter. He knows what they're going to be up against. He knows the questions that are going to rise to the surface. And he sends them straight into the storm, straight into harm's way. There are some that would teach that God does not do this. But Jesus does it right here. Jesus sends his friends into the storm because he knows that he desires to do things in their hearts and in their lives inside of the storm that cannot happen outside of the storm. Do you realize, and there are some of you, and this hits very close to home, but do you realize that any storm you encounter, God is working through? Do you realize that there's no scenario in your life, bad as things may look, through which God is not at work? That's not a cliche. That's not just something we say to make ourselves feel better. That's the truth of God's word. Jesus, knowing what the disciples need, knowing what he wants to do in their hearts, knowing what he wants to do in their lives, knowing that he's preparing them for things to come, sends them into a storm because he's going to do something in the storm that can't take place outside of the storm. And perhaps that's exactly where God has you this morning. There are some here, and in your life, the winds are strong, the waves are high, and in the midst of the storm, you've got some questions. You're wondering where God is at. Why is this happening? Why weren't you given advance notice? How is it that you deserve this? I can't find him. Where is he? And the first thing that we learn from this passage is that storms are a certainty of life. They do not catch God off guard, and he intends to work through them for your good. But what you need as you process the certainty of life's storms, because that will not be enough. That knowledge will not be enough to take you through them. because you can know that they are coming. You can say, okay, I guess I'm with you. They're a reality. I've been through enough of them to know that they come. But that knowledge alone will not serve as a strong foundation for you to pass through the storms without being shaken, without being thrown off course. And Jesus, knowing this, moves to teach the disciples and every one of us something that will allow you to navigate and process the storms of life without being shaken, and that is the promise of his presence. Look at verses 19 through 21. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea, and coming near the boat, they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. It's interesting, as you think about this passage, it's not only recorded here in John, it's also recorded in Matthew's gospel and in Mark's gospel. But John's account is unique. It's first of all unique in the perspective it's told from, because while Matthew and Mark tell the perspective from the story from the perspective of Jesus standing on the shore watching the disciples in distress, John tells the story from the perspective of the disciples waiting for Jesus in the boat, in the storm, waiting for Jesus to come, waiting for something to happen. And the question is, why? I mean, why the change in perspective? If it was good enough for Matthew and it was good enough for Mark, why is it not good enough for John? Why does John tell the story, the same story, just from a different vantage point? It's not as if Jesus is going to launch into some long discourse about his ability to walk on water. So, hey, I did that. I walked on water so I could talk to you a little bit. I've just kind of picked up that talent. It's not like that. Because here's the deal. Jesus is not even going to mention this after it happens. He's not going to talk about it. And after it happens, the disciples aren't going to talk about it. So who's it for? It's for the disciples, but it's also for you. And it's for me. Because Jesus intends to clarify and underline something that happened in the story that came before. Because we said earlier that the events of chapter 6 are interconnected. It's a unit. So that the feeding of the 5,000 is a miracle, which is connected to Jesus walking on water, which is connected to Jesus teaching about himself at the end of this chapter. It's a unit, and so John includes this story about Jesus walking on water because he intends to clarify and underline something for the disciples that he's afraid they might have missed and you might have missed. Something that happens at the end of the feeding of the 5,000. Look at verse 12, John chapter 6, verse 12. Jesus says, "Gather up the leftover fragments that nothing may be lost." Then he says in verse 13, "So they gathered them up and filled the baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten." 12 baskets. 12 baskets. What's the significance of that? Well, there are 12 disciples. Jesus calls them the 12. 12 baskets, 12 disciples. And what Jesus intends to say to them and say to you through this miracle and through those 12 baskets of miracle bread provision is this. When you give and you give and you give and you give in Jesus' service, he will supply all that you need. Even when you think you can't give anymore. When you're totally depleted. when you are totally tired and worn out, and it's all because you served and you gave and you followed him and you helped him and you were serving him, Jesus will come to you and give you exactly what you need. When you feel like you don't have enough, he will be enough. That's the message. When you feel like your back is against the wall, when you feel like there's no hope and that the storm is too big, he knows what you need. That's the 12 baskets. And in case you missed it or the disciples missed it, Jesus comes to them walking on the water to make that point exceedingly clear. You notice that as Jesus comes walking on the water, their lives are in danger. They've had the miracle bread. They've had his provision, but now their lives are in danger. Now the storm is brewing above them. So though they've seen God do a miracle, I mean, that was like a couple hours ago. We're in trouble now. The storm is brewing now. So yes, we've forgotten about the bread because we're in a storm and we're gonna die. I mean, you think that's where the disciples are at on this deal. John recognizes that. And they've got all these questions, even though they saw that miracle and even though they got the 12 baskets. And as their lives are in danger, the stakes are raised. And in the midst of that, Jesus comes walking to them on the water. And as he comes to them, what does he say? He says, "It is I. Do not be afraid." And in the midst of that, you might think, well, he's just saying hello, which is a funny time to say hello. The storm is raging. He's walking on the water. It's not like a great time to just say, "Hey, what's up, guys?" That's not what's happening. The disciples recognize the gravity of what Jesus is declaring in that moment. They recognize it because they know their Bible really well. They know the Old Testament. And in Exodus chapter 3, we'll read some of it in just a moment, but in Exodus chapter 3, the children of Israel are in slavery. They're in bondage in Egypt. They've been there for 400 years. And Moses is a shepherd, and he's leading his sheep, his flock, through the wilderness of Midian. And as he comes to the base of a mountain, he sees a bush, and the bush is on fire. And out of the bush, God begins to speak to him. And what God says out of the burning bush is that God says he's seen the plight of his people, and he's going to deliver them. And then he looks, you know, it's almost as if he points at Moses and says, "And you're the guy. I'm going to use you. You're going to go to Pharaoh and you're going to say, 'Let my people go,' and they're going to go." And Moses, you got to have sympathy for the guy. He's like, it's been 400 years. I mean, I think somebody's probably come along and said that to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh just like killed him or something. I mean, how's that going to work? So he's got some questions. And now look at how he responds, chapter 3, verse 11. "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?' He said," that being God, "'But I will be with you. And this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain.' Then Moses said to God, 'If I come to the people of Israel and I say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' What shall I say to them? What's your calling card? Who are you?" And God said to Moses, "I am who I am." Now back to John 6. Something you have to understand in order to process all that's going on in this scene and what the disciples are thinking as Jesus says, "It is I." To understand, the Old Testament is written in Hebrew. New Testament is written in Greek. In the Greek translation, though, called the Septuagint of the Old Testament, when God says, I am who I am, the Greek translation is ego eimi. Now, Jesus comes walking to the disciples on the water and says, it is I, ego eimi, do not be afraid. Added to that, all of a sudden in their minds, they're processing the images from the Exodus. They hear him say that, and all of a sudden these images from the Exodus are sparked. And Moses leading the children of Israel out of Egypt, they get trapped against the Red Sea. And there's nowhere to go, and there's nowhere to turn, and the Egyptians are coming. And what does God do? He parts the waters. And the psalmist, talking about God parting the waters and delivering the children of Israel, writes this in Psalm 77, verse 19, about God, your way was through the sea, your path through the great waters, your footprints were unseen. Jesus comes walking on the sea and says to them, it is I am, ego eimi, do not be afraid. Do you realize what he's saying? That the God who delivered the people out of Egypt, the God who called Moses and equipped him to lead people through the Red Sea, the God who parted the waters, that's me. I'm that God. The upshot is this. No matter the storm that you're in, no matter the circumstance that you're facing, if the God of the universe who parted the Red Sea, if the God of the universe who led the children of Israel through the desert, if the God of the universe who created all that you see gets in your boat, you're going to be okay. If God's in your boat, it's going to be okay. If God's in your boat, it doesn't matter the storm that is brewing over you. It doesn't matter the situation that you're walking through, no matter how desperate it is, no matter how dire your circumstance, if the God of the universe steps into your boat, it's going to be all right. That's what Jesus is affirming for the disciples. When you give and you give and you give and you give, when you're at the end of your rope and you feel totally depleted and you feel like God doesn't see, God doesn't know, you're tempted to feel that way. You need to know that I'm enough for you and I've never left you and I know exactly what you need. That's the truth that Jesus is clarifying for them in case they missed it in the 12 baskets. He comes to them and says, I am, ego eimi, do not be afraid. For some of you, the fact is that the storms of life are threatening to overwhelm you, and you're wondering, is it just me out here? Am I all alone? Because I feel alone. Because the fact of the matter is, when it's your storm, the waves are higher, the winds are stronger. I mean, we all know this. When you're walking through it, when your back is against the wall, it's a bigger deal. I mean, it's minor surgery for you. It's major surgery for me. That's the way it works. That everything is amplified. Everything is blown up in our minds, and you feel like you're alone, and you feel like he doesn't see you, and you feel like he doesn't know where you're at. And Jesus comes walking on the water to the disciples to say, that's not true. That's not true. If God is in your boat, you're going to be okay. So even if the winds of cancer are blowing against the shore of your life, even if a storm is brewing over your relationship with your teenager, even if clouds are gathering at work and you don't know how it's going to go and you don't know if you're going to keep your job or lose your job and there's just a real storm there, and there's all kinds of reasons for questions and doubts and fears, you're not alone, because if you have a relationship with Jesus, the God of the universe is in your boat. And he comes to you to let you know he's with you. He's with you. And for some of you, you could say, well, the storm has been going for a very, very long time, and I just don't know if I could take it anymore, and I don't see any end in sight. So that's great that he's with me, but I just need to know when this whole thing is going to be over. I want you to notice verse 21. He gets in the boat, and it says, immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. Jesus gets in their boat, and immediately they reach their destination. So there are some of you here this morning, and you're saying, I need that to be today. I need God to help me. I just can't take it. I don't know when it's going to end, because it seems like it's been going forever, and I just don't see an end in sight. And what you need to know is that if the God of the universe is in your boat, it could be at your destination in an instant. That he's able to bring that situation or that storm to a conclusion in just a moment. He's that powerful. He knows exactly what you need. He knows where you're at. He knows where your destination is, and he will get you there. He will. Additionally, there are some, and you're not in the storm, but you're getting ready to step into the boat because God is speaking to you. He's calling you to go. He's calling you to give. He's calling you to serve. He's calling you to speak out. He's calling you to step out in faith, to get into the boat, because he's prompting you that way, and the future is uncertain. And the reality is that this text tells us that you can be confident in taking any risk for God, because there's no risk that you could take for God and think that he would not be right there with you. That no matter what boat you're stepping into, he's going to be right beside you, because God never asks any one of his children to go it alone. Not one of them. So no matter where you feel like you're called to, or what you're stepping into, or how uncertain it may feel, there is a confidence that comes from the truth of this passage, that God will go before you, and no matter how risky it looks, he'll be with you. You won't be on your own. So regardless of whether you're in the storm or you're getting ready to step into the boat of an uncertain future, Jesus' word to you is the same. It's the same to every one of us. It is I. Do not be afraid. He's with you. Let's pray.